Good evening, Schwarzers. It's Ethan McKinley, your host. And again, I'm back, and I've been asked to co-host again the wonderful podcast, Was It Worth It? On the other end of the line is the charming owner of the Master Debater Station and program director, Christoph Parr, a.k.a. Toffer.
Hello.
How are you?
I can't compete with your accent, so I'll just stick with mine.
Yes, this is the show where we take a simple man through the annals, the hallways of movie history, as he's not seen very many large-scale films that many of us would cling to and call classics. The Star Wars films, the Indiana Joneses, the Lethal Weapons. I know you've seen Lethal Weapon, don't jump in.
It's awful as shit.
As before we even started recording this show, ladies and gentlemen, he revealed to me he'd not seen any James Bond films except for 20 minutes of The World Is Not Enough with Denise Richards, who played a nuclear physicist. Miscast much?
Big fan of Denise Richards.
If you are tuning in and you enjoyed our show last week, which was Into the Night versus One Fine Day, well done. It ran a bit long, but we're back. This week, of course, we are returning to you and we're going to review or walk Toffer through The Fly, 1986, the classic sci-fi horror drama directed by David Cronenberg, the famous body horror director who's directed such films as Existence with Jude Law, A History of Violence with Viggo Mortensen, Eastern Promises with Viggo Mortensen. Perhaps they got on, they worked on two projects together. I think Toffer was compelled either positively or negatively after seeing The Fly. It's whether you like the film or not, I think it's an visceral experience of sick and disgusting imagery. As I said,
I now understand the term body horror.
Yes, yeah. I mean, well, it's an entire genre, really. It's
I'd never heard of it before.
Mostly built off the back of like people like David Cronenberg, really alone. I think. I mean, a couple of other directors that I can't think of right now have tried it, and there's been nods to films.
Well, isn't the thing like a body horror?
Yes, that's it. Perfect. Yeah, the thing's a body horror film. It's this notion of this disease or this kind of like force within you that's going to kind of destroy your body and remove any kind of like strip you of your humanity. your humanity, essentially. Although I think that guy having his foot melted off was probably the weirdest thing for me. I've got this really weird thing about having feet removed. I don't know why, but we'll get to that. But anyway,
will we get to that? Is that a thing?
Yes, for me, along with spanking to those like minuscule like 10-second side boob shots of Gina Davis.
Good side boob.
The chick he picks up in a bar. Yeah. But yeah, you were so, I guess, affected and compelled by this alleged
interested.
Film.
Yeah, I was interested.
Interested. Yeah. He went back and you sought out the 1958 Fly, which weirdly, even though it looks like it's from a completely other era, there was only 28 years between both of these films. It's so strange that the shocking kind of like juxtaposition between like, I guess, an old film in brackets and that when The Fly came out in 1986, only 28 years between those two films.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned this on a previous show, of course, that there was that film I mentioned in 1976, Logan's Run. It looks really cheesy and weird in a good way, but it's crap, but in a good way. That's like, I guess, one of those futuristic 70s films where they just filmed it in like a shopping mall, which would have been like a modern building back then. It just looks rubbish. And then within a year's time, you've got like Star Wars, which ushers in this entire new era of like special effects filmmaking and like images you literally couldn't believe were happening before your eyes. It's very strange that things took this amazing like right angle turn right around like the mid 70s. And then you've got films like The Fly where, I guess, like special effects and makeup became the forefront after, of course, a previous episode we've already done, Toffer, which was American Werewolf.
Yes.
Chris
Was Whalis. American Werewolf before this then?
Yeah, American Werewolf 1980, I think 81. And that was, of course, Rick Baker, who was in Into the Night last week playing the sleazy drug dealer. He had one line along with all the other cameos we covered in that 8-hour long show we did.
Yeah, we're not going to go through that again.
Chris Whalis, of course, came along and did this, and he won an Oscar. Another special effects special makeup effects Oscar started and created. They created the category, as I mentioned, for American Werewolf in London. So Rick Baker is a golden baldy. And then Chris Wallace won one for this. Chris previously did Gremlins, I think. And yeah, there we go. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, swiftly. So when did this film first come into your life?
It came out of the cinema. Obviously, I was a massive like horror freak as a kid, basically. Like
you didn't see it in the cinema, did you? Oh, you said...
No, I mean, that year, 1987, I was meant to go and see Bigfoot and the Hendersons, and I walked into Lost Boys by accident.
Yeah.
And what could have been an amazing experience, like, oh, I'm a big boy now, I snuck into a movie. I got so scared I'd be thrown out or like outed by an adult going, that's some punk kid. I left the cinema and then found the right one to see Bigfoot and the Hendersons.
Great film, by the way.
I hang my head in shame. Yeah, both great films, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I still believe in Bigfoot, but I leave the door open.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I was just a massive horror freak. I mean, I grew up watching like Hammer horror films on TV late at night. I wanted to be a special effects like makeup creator and technician.
Oh yeah, I remember you said this before. Yeah, yeah.
I just didn't know, like, coming from Dudley and not having any heat or knowing anyone.
Dudley.
I think now. I would probably write to somewhere like the Jim Henson Creature Shop and just ask if I can make like tea and like be a runner and stuff and just work your way in that way. Because I've heard many people now just said they literally went to the source and asked the people if they could like pick up rubbish or just be around the studio. And that's how they got their start. So in hindsight, kids, if you are thinking of going into the makeup special effects realm.
It's good ask.
Just go and ask, or failing that, don't even bother, because now it's all digital makeup effects and things. So, yeah, just a massive horror freak as a kid.
Okay.
I knew about The Fly. I heard about it. I had Fangoria magazine. I used to collect from Nostalgia and Comics in Birmingham. So I'd go off on my own on the train to go and get all these like horror magazines and like creepy comics and Creepshow, that kind of thing, the EC-style comics.
Yeah.
So I knew all about this film. I'd seen all the special effects. I'd seen the like the production, the making of. So when it finally came out in, God, the end of that year onto VHS, I was watched it, was sickened, captivated, shocked. And
yeah, how did a 12-year-old Ethan McKinley deal with the shock and horror and grotesque?
I don't know, because I think, weirdly, I think as a kid, it kind of like... washes over you. And I think a lot of like, not maybe. That I recommend sitting down with a kid and watching The Fly. If I had a kid, I wouldn't do it.
He fucked me up and I'm 28.
Yeah, but my mother always used to let me watch anything I wanted, # bad parenting. And but she'd always say, just bear in mind, none of this is actually real. I mean, I know all this stuff anyway, because I was like this avid follower of kind of movie lore and you know, how films were made.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I probably have the same experience you did, but I guess perhaps I wasn't that badly affected by it. I don't know. I think,
the imagery, I watched a couple of days ago and I haven't been able to get that image of him throwing up on that foot.
Yeah. I think that's probably the worst one, isn't it? When he like pukes on the donut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry,
that's disgusting. Can before we like, I know we're into it now, but. Fucking Jeff Goldblum is mint.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like when I first discovered him. Like, I mean, we're having a Goldblum season, but like last week.
And I'm all right with it. I'm all right with it. Look, last week when we watched Into the Night, before that, I was like, oh, fuck, I can't stand Jeff Goldblum. I've seen Jurassic Park. I didn't think much of it. Sorry, come at me. I don't care. I don't like Jurassic Park. What are you going to do about it? And that's the only thing I've
seen.
He's
like a douchey scientist in that, isn't he? And I think
a
lot of his Goldblumisms, I guess, are kind of dialed right back, or they don't spend a lot of time with the character because he kind of gets knocked over by the T-Rex, and you don't see all his like weird hand gestures and like hinge-wristed weirdness, do you?
Massive eyes.
Yeah,
he looks like he's always looking for his car keys.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what makes Into the Night maybe watchable, is his performance. And then the next year, 1986, his make or break film, which launched him, I think, more of an onto an international like canvas.
Yeah.
It's like Goldblum turned up to 11, isn't it? He's like...
He could have been nominated for an Oscar in this, and I don't know why he wasn't.
Well, I think it's the genre, isn't it? They rarely kind of like reward things. Like, obviously, the makeup was impressive, and that's why that won the Oscar. But like... genre films like this, sci-fi, horror, never get nominated. And I think it speaks to that thing. I think I've mentioned on the show before, it's like if you see a busker, but he's like an opera singer busker, you'll see visibly people as you're passing him giving him money because it like they want to appear like they've got class and education and understanding. Yeah. But if it's a guy just playing a guitar or a wiffle, like a...
Fucking how old am you?
What was I going to say? Not a skiffle board. What is a like a washboard? Yeah, yeah, whatever. But like, if it's something other than like a classy busking thing,
yeah,
you won't see that many people actually giving money or donating. And it's all that weird virtue signaling. I think by the same token, a lot of films in this kind of realm of sci-fi and horror get like overlooked and
comedy films because, get overlooked as well.
Yeah, yeah, there should be like a musical comedy awards in the Oscars as well. But their argument to this, and this is even said recently, because I think, was it Avatar? Someone said one of the actors there should have been nominated for stuff, even though it was kind of like CGI. You still have to act all those parts out, and it's kind of done almost like you'd act out a play.
Yeah, like Andy Serkis, like he does.
Andy
a lot
Serkis,
of fucking work.
Yeah, even better, like reference, like he definitely should have won an Oscar, but they just think, oh, that's just something over there. But like these films kind of built kind of Hollywood essentially.
Yeah,
this is where all the money comes through. All those like wonderful, oh, Meryl Streep's brave performance of the woman with no legs, and she had a rubber nose, so she did like Nicole Kidman won an Oscar for The Hours. Not that all great a performance, but she had like a rubber nose on. If you put a rubber nose on, or you play someone in a wheelchair or a lesbian, I mean, Tropic Thunder ripped the
never got full retard, brother.
Exactly, but yeah, I mean, again, like I said, I think the only actor I can think of that's been nominated for something in this genre at the time, same year, 1986, was
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver for Aliens. That's the only time I can really think that's ever happened. She didn't win, of course, but it was like an earth-shattering thing that someone actually noticed and did that she got an Oscar nomination for Aliens.
Yeah,
but it doesn't ever happen. It still doesn't happen to this day. And the argument, as I said before, the Oscars people say, oh, the ceremony would just be even longer and it would be boring and dull to just keep going through endless categories. But it's just like,
oh, but we need to see Best Costume though. We need to see that one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, It's all like all part of the movie making fabric, and like I said, these films are the things that build these studios. They're made or broken every year based off these big blockbusters, all these kind of like gifts that keep on giving, these genre films that keep a core audience. People keep buying the DVDs, buying the Blu-rays, buying the soundtrack, and discussing these films ad infinitum. A lot of the films that you see win Oscars aren't ever remembered or discussed today, and things that almost won are fondly remembered. It's a very strange kind of like weird phony thing, the Oscars and all that stuff, but then
yeah, very self-congratulatory.
But enough about politics, let's talk about Jeff Goldblum's face melting off.
Yeah, and Jeff Goldblum's fucking looking for his keys acting tremendous.
I don't know, I have to say I've never seen you on the show so far so kind of like moved to kind of like be so like vocal or like passionate about as you talk about something.
I'm in love with Jeff Goldblum. I'm in love with Jeff Goldblum. It's like Into the Night sort of sparked it, and I went, oh, he's interesting. I like his choices. He makes very interesting acting choices. And he makes this film very watchable because he's just so different.
Yeah,
like, you can tell. Well, I don't know his background, but it's like someone just had a bit of a weird mate, and he turned up for an audition with his mate. And like his mate was his proper actor, and he checked his lines and did everything, and had proper classes and everything like that. And like the producer comes out and like have gone, oh, you're interesting. Come and do this. Come read these lines. And he's like, I don't know how to.
Barely tries and then gets in. Yeah. That's how Mo Gibson's career started.
Well, Mo Gibson's a legend, mate. Mo Gibson's back.
He's back. I love Mo Gibson.
Mo Gibson's back.
But he never went away.
Well, he did. He's that strange and peculiar that...
Yeah, that's the good word, actually. Peculiar to describe.
Yeah,
it,
like,
Jeff.
I will watch him do anything. And that's as soon as, because this film starts with him talking to Gina Davis at that weird party thing.
Yeah, with his mullet. He's got a Mel Gibson mullet.
Mate, I've got my notes in my phone, right? And the first note I wrote was 80s font, exclamation mark, because tremendous 80s font in the opening credits. And then I've put great hair, very fluffy Jeff Goldblum hair, lovely. And like three minutes into the film, already more interesting than his character in Into the Night.
Well, I think because the original Fly, because you were compelled to go and watch that. What did you think of the original Fly?
I really enjoyed the original, but the acting is gash. Except for Vincent Price, who, for some reason, I have never watched a Vincent Price film other than Edward Scissorhands, but that don't really count.
Well, Vincent Price has his own kind of peculiar Jeff Goldblum-ness.
Vincent Price is tremendous. And I've, since that film, I've watched House on a Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
And that's class. I'm going to start watching more Vincent Price films because he's mint.
There's actually a good one called Theatre of Blood where he's an out-of-work actor whose career has been ruined by all these critics who have written off and slated all the most recent films and plays he's done and he can never get work again. They've ruined him.
Is he going to fuck them all?
So he plans on doing this like theatrical kind of revenge and killing them all one by one. It's just Vincent Price. And it's set in the 70s as well, so it's like really 70s. So it's Vincent Price being weird Vincent Price in kind of like these like mid-70s British horror film. It's really bizarre.
With his lovely mustache.
With his twizzly mustache. Yeah. In fact, Vincent Price, I think, was the original model by Stan Lee for Doctor Strange. And I think if you look online, you can find a bunch of like Doctor Stranges with like Vincent Price heads on. He looks spot on.
I like that. Vincent Price is mint. But other than Vincent Price, I didn't think anybody else was very good.
No.
And the acting from the lead bloke, I can't remember his name, he was terrible.
Oh, Al Hedison.
Yeah, there you go. And the woman was decent enough. And then he did that typical 50s scream, like where the reveal, he reveals he's got a fly head, and then it's like, dun, dun, dun. And she's got proper hands on her face, like Home Alone scream.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that sort of shit, like, was like, oh. But other than that, I thought the story was interesting, but it was just too much about her, really.
Yeah, well, I mean that's what it's discussed in The Making of the Fly. You can actually find this on YouTube, listeners, if you type in Fear of the Flesh or just type in The Making of the Fly. That's the documentary about this, and they actually cover that. And I think the original film is more about this kind of like 50s housewife, and the story is kind of from her point of view, and it's her kind of psychologically coping with what's happened to
it's very, very 50s as well. She's so reliant on her husband.
Yeah, and like come on, as it should be.
Well, yeah, well, we all know that, but you know, there's some people that just
you can't say anymore.
He's still got his dinner, don't he? Even though he's a fucking fly, he's still got his dinner.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like it is very 50s. He's got like a fly hand and the fly head, and I think they rightfully kind of like,
yeah, he can't talk either, which is a bit awkward.
Yeah, so immediately you lose the one actor completely in it, even though his performance wasn't great. David Hedison, by the way, listeners, if you are a very young David Hedison, he went on to play Felix Leiter in, I think, is it Live and Let Die, the Roger Moore one, and then he played him again in License to Kill. Yeah, he doesn't care about, we won't be doing any James Bond films.
Fuck James Bond.
Was it worth it? I think, well, maybe we should pick one of each James Bond and see what you think at
maybe.
Some point.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
When is there a new James Bond film coming out?
Daniel Craig has signed on to do another James Bond film.
Okay, well, when that one comes out, we'll do a James Bond season.
Okay, we'll do that. But yeah, no, you've lost one lead actor in David Hedison, who's now wearing this fly's head, which kind of looks cool, but it kind of doesn't really make sense in the sense that if you got two liquids and just mixed them together, they'd be mixed completely all over, I think.
It's like oil and water, isn't it? It's like the mixed oil and water, and the oil just stuck to the top, and then he was just the man at the bottom. Didn't make sense.
Yeah, and they threw that kind of story element out for the remake, which I think was the right thing to do, because then you kind of get this slow deterioration, or this kind of like, a lot of critics at the time said it was an allegory for the AIDS virus, or cancer.
I saw that a lot. But John Carpenter, David Cronenberg said it's about aging, didn't they? He said it's all about aging and losing a loved one.
Yeah, and I think because they then turned it from this kind of like from the 50s thing into this like twisted love story where she's still like hanging on. He's trying to save himself, and eventually he kind of succumbs to, I guess, madness. Or is he?
I don't know.
Is he mad? Just, is he not mad?
Yeah, he's just a bit weird.
His idea to kind of like fuse them Jeff all Goldblum. Together at the end. It would just be a big mess, I think.
A big even fucked up kebab. He just looked like a kebab. Like someone had trod on a kebab and put eyes on him.
You should go back and freeze frame what's in his kitchen cabinet, because I swear to this day, his cock and balls are still in one of those jars. I swear to God.
Yeah. That'd be dead good. That's horrible as well when he pulls his nail off and squirts all the shit all over the mirror. I mean, I love popping spots, but that's too much for me, that is.
Well, I mean, you as well, I mean, listeners, if you haven't discovered any of David Cronenberg's other films, check them out. You've seen Scanners, of course, which is all exploding heads, but I think...
He was supposed to be Total Recall, wasn't he? Which I didn't know until I was reading about it.
He was trapped in a contract with Dino De Laurentiis, who kind of did this to a lot of actors, directors, and stars. Arnold Schwarzenegger, if anyone is aware of Raw Deal, which is kind of like the shittiest Schwarzenegger film of that genre, he kind of did that because he had to do it because he was trapped in a contract. Okay, because he did Conan. He signed, I think,
Conan, at the start of the, what is best in life?
Crush your enemies to the dream before you and see the lamentation of the women. So he was stuck in a contract, and he agreed with Dino De Laurentiis. He said, I'll stick with you if you promise me we're going to do Total Recall. And eventually that just fell apart. David Cronenberg was going to direct, and then it just went all up in the air. And I think it was a wrestling match then with Schwarzenegger to get the rights for that film away from De Laurentiis and give them just to whoever. Carol Coe eventually picked it up. He did Terminator 2. And Paul Verhoeven, who directed RoboCop, made that film.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cronenberg was kind of like stuck with him as well. But yeah, this is David Cronenberg's first big film and his most like profitable film to this day.
He actually just did like mainly Canadian films, didn't he?
Yeah, they shot it in Canada, in Canada.
Yeah, because he's got his crew in here, which I found. Like he keeps the same crew, doesn't he?
He does. It's the same kind of like people over and over again. Mm-hmm. And again, they took a chance on him, really, because he'd made one of these like gross, weird films. And it made, $60 million, 40 in America and 20 overseas. So I guess whatever that is now, it was a sizable hit, no less, and is considered a classic.
It is considered a classic, yeah.
What did you... did you like anything about the original Fly? Did you like the addendum at the end of the film? Not spoiling it if anyone's already seen it.
They find
the fly, don't they? Which is the human head with the human hand on an actual fly going, help me.
I knew that going in because I told my mum I was going to watch it, and she told me that when she was little that used to scare her.
Yeah, my mother said that. They've aped it a million times on The Simpsons.
Where I'd seen it. And I was like, oh, is it like The Simpsons with the help me, help me? She went, yeah, it's exactly the same as The Simpsons. I was like, oh, okay. But it's still effective, I think. Not as effective, but it's still a shocking visual. Because I'm scared of spiders.
Right.
So like being fucking completely smothered by a spider is terrifying.
Well, I've got a film for you then, if you're afraid of spiders. There's another 50s sci-fi called The Incredible Shrinking Man.
Okay.
And if you like, have you seen Ant-Man?
Yes.
The Marvel movie? Okay, so if you like that, that deals with all the same stuff, but this is kind of like the horror film version, as this man slowly kind of deteriorates, not only from him, like his girlfriend, his wife, whatever, but it's from society as he kind of gets slowly rejected and seen as a freak. And then he gets even smaller and smaller and smaller. And all the, like the set work's amazing as they kind of depict him like with all these like large sets, but he's actually like a normal sized guy. And then he's like chased around by a spider and various other like weird, creepy crawlers. And then he just like, as he fades and gets small, he has like other obstacles and kind of like trials and tribulations to deal with, depending on what scale he is to the world.
Right. Sounds interesting. I mean,
and the guy that directed it, Jack Arnold, was my favourite scene in Into the Night, because it's okay, he's a nice dog. He's the man with the angry dog from Into the Night.
But yeah, I still enjoyed the 50s film. I liked, obviously, the visuals, and Vincent Price was tremendous.
Mm.
But I just, I don't know, I didn't think the relationship between the man and the wife was strong enough.
Yeah. Well, again, because he had, like you said, the fly's head, but there's nothing built on their relationship at the start. I think the new one,
they're just
of course,
50s husband and wife. You do as I say. You get ready when I say get ready.
Yeah.
Come on, doll. We're going out. It's one of them.
It should be.
Yeah.
Well, they build a relationship, don't they, in the 1986 version between Geena Davis and Jeff Goldblum? And also, they were kind of like...
It's a love story, isn't it? I've got wrote down grotesque body horror with a heart.
Darling, I love you, but this is grotesque.
Grotesque, yeah. Grotesque body horror with a heart. Even though it's horrible and like some nasty shit happens.
Well, the end's, I think, very effective as well.
Exactly, yeah. Like woven through the film is this.
Very sad when his little claw hands like shoot me in the head.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think Gina Davis gives like a really good performance, considering she was recommended because it's my girlfriend. You need to give her a job. But
he was banging her, weren't he, at the time?
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently, so, he had beef with the other bloke, that Stathis,
giving her beef as well. Yeah, because he the idea at the end of the film, ladies and gentlemen, she would go back to Stathis, who was the kind of like newspaper editor of Particle magazine, who was her previous lover, which is the thing that actually drove him into the telepod when he first teleported himself with the fly by accident.
Yeah, he just got drunk and pissed off, didn't he?
And did it anyway. But the idea, I think, in the script, the addendum, was that they would get back together and she would either keep or get rid of the baby. That was left, obviously, open at the end of this film and then gets answered in the sequel, which people either really love or they really hate.
Oh, really?
But yeah, there's this kind of like weird, they shot every single version where she wakes up next to him, she's pregnant, she wakes up alone, and she's
not
pregnant.
And they're like a weird fucking butterfly baby.
There is, yes. There's a deleted scene where it kind of like zooms into her belly and she's asleep or she's dreaming. And there's this kind of like chrysalis on a branch, I guess, in her body, in her womb.
Possibly.
And then it opens and a stop motion claymation baby with butterfly wings wakes up and flies off into the womby ether with rainbow wings.
I much prefer the ending they went with.
Oh, yeah. Just fade to black.
Just lots of fade to black again. Is that an 80s thing?
Yeah, because I think it happens in The Thing a lot. Like you said, the other body horror film, they kind of like, people have this grimaced expression. They just slowly discover what the thing is, and it just kind of like weirdly fades to black, doesn't it? I don't know. I'm trying to think of any other films that happens in. I mean, it does, but like, yeah, there's a lot of fade to blacks in both this and The Thing.
Do you know what else I noticed? This is either the third or fourth film we've done since we've been doing this where there's a computer that's used as an exposition device.
Yes, this is true.
Why is that? Is that an 80s thing as well?
I suppose because computers were kind of like a new thing back then. It looked kind of like, ooh, we're doing science and it's sci-fi and ooh.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It must be because The Thing did it. And it explained what was going on with the obviously thing and how long it would take to end the Earth, which how it would know, I have no idea at all.
Well, I'd imagine that... And it is. I think from a directorial point of view, it's more effective than someone going, well, this is going to happen next and this and this and this, as opposed to having this, like, having to read it yourself and then, like, make of that what you will in your own head.
Well, the computer in this film, his little pod device, was its own little, had its own little character, really, didn't it?
Yeah. And the baboon that he turned inside out.
Why did he have baboons?
I don't know. Dangerous as fuck.
What exactly, the nasty bastards? Why wouldn't he just use a rat?
What if you were asleep with that baboon, like, ripped your nuts off?
Because there was two of them.
So I know.
They'd be winding each other up.
It's a monkey with a dog's head. Who invented that? That's ridiculous.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why he had baboons. That struck me as a bit strange. It's like, we could use a rat. Yeah, but rats ain't that interesting. Let's get a fucking baboon.
Get a tiny, helpless monkey thing. I don't know.
Yeah, they've got to be cheaper, really, haven't they?
One of those hold on to the end of your finger.
Or a tramp. Use a tramp.
Yes, homeless people. I teleport them, and weirdly, they come out clean on the other side. I don't know where the dirt goes. It's amazing.
Yeah, that might be. Yeah, they should have done that for the sequel.
If the teleportation industry goes under, at least can sell these to like Indesit or fucking Hoover. But yeah, the inside out baboon scene—that's the thing that messed me up as a kid. I think
that was the first scene that shocked me. Yeah,
it's like Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
this is a bit much.
he's still alive, and it's oh no.
There's an intermediary scene that you may have seen if you've seen the making of, you and the listeners, that. He actually teleports a cat. I don't know where the cat came from. And
just a stray cat.
That's it, and they kind of come out the other side all mixed up, but the special effects look so shitty and bad, and they also thought, like,
didn't he beat it to death as well?
Yeah, he beats it to death, but it just doesn't look, like, very good. It's like, it looks like a swastika on the Nazi theme, but it's like, it's got a monkey and a cat all spinning out of it, basically. It's like a pinwheel of monkeys and cats put together, but it looks really bad. You can probably find it online, listeners, if you actually look. Actually type in monkey cat scene from The Fly. It doesn't look very good at all. That's probably the reason it was cut so to speak.
I've got a question for you.
Go.
I've got a question for you. Right. He went to that party. I'm assuming it was something to do with his... It was like a work outing, possibly.
No, it's because I... because I work at things like that, don't I? So it's probably like, well, I mean, it's a press day, I'd imagine, for
scientists
and like special interest projects, basically. Yeah, I mean, because I do stuff in the fashion world, but I'm like, they do have things where they kind of get together. I guess it's like D2, is it, that Disney thing they have,
or
like
Comic-Con.
I guess it's for engineers and like physicists and things. That's the only thing I can probably imagine, because that's
so. Jeff Goldblum wasn't aware that Gina Davis was a journalist.
Well, no, because she says I have other stories to cover. Then he kind of like heads off the passengers.
Yeah, he ignores that. He's like, "Yeah, bro, I want to bang you though."
Yeah.
So is he just taking her to his crib to show her the pods, play the piano for her, just to bang her?
I think so, yeah, because he kind of uses the pods.
I prefer that.
Like,
look at this.
His magician's trick when he picks up that kind of like that woman of ill repute in the bar
with
when
the
he
freckles,
breaks her boyfriend's
with the
arm.
Many, many freckles.
Many freckles and the cheap face who... oh, I'm such a little terror. I used to spank to that scene. It's like 10 seconds.
She's got a very porn star face.
10 seconds of climbing out of the telepod and then mounting her with a bit of side boob, and that was enough for a 13-year-old.
She
me.
Does give him a good, like, some good fuck me eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It's fine, mate. It's fine, mate.
Because I was saying to you the other day, it used to take so little back then. And I'm sure, like, we should do an episode, or you should do a Master Debaters episode where you kind of find out what it took, what tiny thing it would take to kind of get the job done when you were like 12 or 13 or 14.
Black Eyed Peas videos.
Okay.
I love Will I Am. Fergie,
nothing like a talented black man to get my murder running, let me tell you.
Anything with Fergie in it. And Girls Aloud. Oh, Girls Aloud. Oof.
What's that new group that's out now? There's still four girls, but they're kind of like skankier looking and they're all a bit kind of like
Little Mix.
Little Mix, that's it. All look great.
I'm a bit in love with Little Mix.
Yeah, like even the awful one is like still better than any of the ones in Girls Aloud.
You want to bet Jesse, mate?
Well, yeah, there's two really great ones and then there's like a pig and then there's one that's not so great.
Yeah.
It's almost like that evolutionary scale where you see like the man walking upright and it just tracks back all the way to the chimpanzee. That's what Little Mix is like.
They are beautiful. They are, yeah. Right.
But they're not beautiful in that kind of like sense that, oh, they're all beautiful. They look a bit cheap, but that's good.
That's what I like, yeah.
They look like they're going to go ass to mouth on the first date, and that's why we like Little Mix, ladies.
Never go ass to mouth, mate.
Never go full retard. anyway, back to the original Fly, 1958. Okay. Is the original Fly worth it, do you think?
It is. It is just worth it, just for Vincent Price, and you do sort of need to see the ship fly at the end because it's like
the ship fly.
You do.
That's what they land on.
Because it's. I don't know, it's interesting enough to go, oh, okay, that's what it took. But then...
What would you give it out of 10?
5.5.
Okay.
So
an average, good, watchable, worth-watching sci-fi film.
I probably will watch it again. It's one of the... I will, because it's... It was like,
I've got both sequels. I've got Return of the Fly and The Fly 2.
I did. One of the things that did confuse me with The Fly... What was the French thing about? The original?
I don't know. I think, isn't it by, it was, I think it's, it was an article, wasn't it? Or a short story.
Playboy magazine.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm getting Planet of the Apes mixed up by Pierre Boulle, who did the Planet of the Apes original novel.
Uh-huh.
Or the guy that wrote the article was French. I should have done more research, but I didn't listen. I'm sorry.
Everything was French, except all the actors.
Yeah.
Oh, the police
in France, wasn't it?
Yeah, the police, their chief of police bloke, he was French, but like the wealthy family weren't French, and that just baffled me. But that did.
I wonder if it was actually shot in France because maybe like Vincent Price Campbell went, "I will only do it if we shoot in France because I've never been to France."
That's not a bad Vincent Price.
I'm Vincent Price. I will work on my accent. No, I'm turning to Mr. Burns.
You are turning to Mr. Burns.
I like the way Rob thinks.
it is worthy. Just The original.
And The Fly, 1986, that had this like deep effect on you. The imagery is still lingering with you as we speak. I've never heard you so like animated over something on this show. This is quite good. I'm enjoying this episode.
I don't know what it is about. It's like the thing sort of got me quite excited because I really enjoyed all the...
It gets under your skin, doesn't it? You end up thinking about it after going, God, what if that was happening to me? What would I do? How would I like navigate through that situation?
Because he's fucking loving it at one point.
Oh, yeah.
He's fucking loving it, doing all these flips, and it's a better Spider-Man film than Amazing Spider-Man 2.
The only thing I will say, they kind of like, they plot hole themselves at the start versus the end of the film, because if he went through with The Fly,
yeah,
he'd come out as a big mess immediately. I understand they did it for dramatic purposes, yeah, that The Fly slowly kind of grows out of him, but like...
Maybe that's another reason they cut the dog thing out then.
Yeah.
Well, the cat, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because when he transports with the door open at the end, when he tries to escape the pod, and he gets transported with the pod and comes out as like that gigantic mess at the end.
Yeah, trodden on kebab.
Yeah, that kind of fuses both at the same time in real time, doesn't it? So, but no, they did the right thing. I understand that it was for dramatic purposes, so you could have this slow kind of like deterioration of his like mental...
If he looks a bit like Michael Jackson as well at one point.
Yes.
The one he came up with a walkie stick.
The kind of Pepsi commercial Michael Jackson when he got his head burnt from that light. And that's why he got hooked on painkillers.
Yeah, he reminded me of Michael Jackson. But hang on, let me get through my notes because I've got some more notes.
Let's hear the notes before we wrap up. Because I'm talking here. We're not listening to what you think.
I enjoyed, I'm finally onto something big. Huge. What? His cock? That made me laugh. Stathis got jokes, man.
Oh, if you think he's funny in the first one, wait till you see the second one. He's got some great zingers in the second one.
Oh, I've got side boob, Gina Davis. Lovely side boob. That's another note. And I did enjoy his fucking, his weird, like, flesh speech about penetration and when he went all Shakespearean on her.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Insect politics. Well, he basically wrapped it up
The society straight line be about flesh. So you can't penetrate beyond society's sick grey fear of the flesh. Deep drink or taste not the plasma spring. What the fuck's that about?
It's his like Shakespearean way of asking to get in his telepod, basically.
That strikes me as something Jeff Goldblum's just gone, I'm just going to say.
Well, he did. I think the speech when he's talking about like teleportation, molecular breakdown and stuff, when he's drinking his coffee and he's putting loads of sugar in it, like half of that was ad-libbed at the end.
I like that, though. That was a nice little touch because he's flying in, flies like sugar.
And also he's kind of like impatient with everyone because he's like kind of streets ahead in terms of like his speed and he's the way he can like come up with something and he's always like steps ahead of other people. So
flies are cunts as well. It's constantly bothering you, so... I like that he turned into a knob.
I think it was well kind of like well done in that sense. And also, like I said, when he's talking about insect politics, and he's trying to say you can't come back here anymore because if you do, I'll probably end up hurting or killing you because I'm losing my kind of human faculty.
Yeah.
It's only that he chases her after that because he like hears that she's pregnant, doesn't he, over the top of the building and then follows them to like the clinic. How he made it to the clinic only just behind them and... Didn't get seen by anyone. Maybe he's just jumping on rooftops, but like, yeah, a giant kebab on legs. Like,
one thing I did notice that could be linked to the original was that he wore the same clothes.
Yeah, that's a reference to Einstein, isn't it? Einstein apparently used to wear the same set of clothes every single day, so he didn't have to expend any kind of like thought wasted on kind of how should I, what should I wear, and how am I presented to people.
Yeah, they did that in the original as well. The only time he changed his clothes was when they went to the opera. Other than that, he wore the same set of clothes.
He wore the same fucking fly head and hand to the end of the film. Which they do in the second one. They don't change it up. The son of the fly, he's got the fly head and the hand again. In fact, I'm going to go back and watch it now and see if he actually has the same like prosthetic head and hand from the original movie.
Yeah. I have wrote down, I would like to see the outtakes of Jeff Goldblum. Because I guarantee no two attempts at a scene are the same. Because I bet he's just dead weird. I bet like one of them's like the complete opposite end of the scale. I'd like to see him work.
Well, he was trying to convey all the mental tics, and the kind of like the weird Tourette's-y nature, physical Tourette's of kind of having something, your body turning into something else. Obviously, also those little twitches and turns.
He twitches, like he switches. And the fact that the, you know, when he's popping his fingers.
Yeah.
His fake fingers looked really good. They were dead long. He's not like Jeremy Beadle because he had one massive hand. And one fucking normal size small.
Jamie Beadle has quite a small cock, but on the other hand.
The Americans aren't going to understand that, but if you're English, that joke's hilarious.
Just Google Jeremy Beadle, folks, and you'll see him. Not that we should speak ill of the dead. He was a very much beloved TV host, but I think he had some childhood disease. Is it polio or something? Or whatever?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Something
he
quite
was born
horrible.
With a very tiny hand.
Yeah.
And if you watch his presenting, he always has it hidden behind his main hand or in his pocket or something. Or he'd have like this forced perspective, like piece of glass, almost like an old television set from the 50s, where it's like half a domed piece of glass, almost like half a ball. And he'd have one hand behind that, so it would look normal size in comparison to his other hand. That was a lie. Yeah. So in wrapping up, what did you think of The Fly in 1986, directed by Jeff Goldblum?
It was bloody marvellous.
Okay.
Bloody marvellous.
Have we come across a film that we've allegedly a legendary film so far that you've not found that great? Because the main thrust of this is we've done a few little films, but like all the main alleged classic films that I think we've watched, you've all said have been worth it, haven't you?
Well, Alien 3, but nobody will ever know about that one because that one's disappeared. It was gone forever.
It's a Christmas special.
Yeah, pretty much every film we've done so far. Like, some films I've obviously liked more than others, but they've all been worthy. This is probably my... it's either this or Alien have been my favourite one so far.
Oh, really? Not The Thing? I would have thought you'd this and The Thing would have been the
I
most...
I did like The Thing a lot. But I probably could watch The Fly more, even though it's... Both their endings are quite dark. But...
Well, I mean, yeah, because, I mean... Well, I mean, they both end the same in the sense that kind of like not evil wins, but kind of like
nobody wins.
Nobody. Well, I guess. Well, he doesn't win in The Fly. He loses his life, I guess.
Yeah.
And The Thing kind of wins in a sense that when that rescue team eventually probably does arrive, even if Kurt Russell or the other guy may or may not be The Thing, whoever they take back, whether they're frozen to death or not, which they most likely would be, The Thing's going to break out again and obviously take over the world
in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was some stupid... It gave him out about like 127 hours. It was some stupid, wasn't it?
Like that, yeah. The one thing about Gina Davis's character, though, she needs to work on a pillow talk. A fucking...
Yeah.
After Dick game is weak. Stop talking about baby flesh.
Yeah.
Just after he bangs her, she starts talking about baby flesh. I know that, like...
Some girls are like that, though. Some girls are no pillow talk when you're doing it as well. I once said to a girl, I was like, oh, how's that feel? Do you like that? She was like, well, I'm here, aren't I? I was like, oh, God. If you want to talk about a rod going away real quick, just say that in my ear. So it's like, oh, God, come on. I'm trying to communicate with you, silly cow. Get out of my house.
Sexy talk, Ethan. That's good days. I'm not good at the sexy talk, mate. I get quite uncomfortable with you.
It's good. You should work on it. It adds an extra kind of dimension, but a lot of people... get weirded out or freaked out by it. I'm not saying like awful things in your ear, going, oh, I want to shit in your mouth. And stuff. Like, just the basic person-to-person communication. Like, does that feel good? How are you? Oh, you look amazing. Like, not that like cardboard, but like, you try and say something nice, like, oh, how's that? And they go,
how's that?
I'm here, aren't I? So, oh, God.
How's that, my mate? Is that all right, is he?
Yeah.
You enjoying yourself?
All right, bud. Do you like that? Well, I'm here, I am. Oh, no.
Oh, fucking hell. But I very much enjoyed my time with this film.
Well, that's good. It's one of my favourites. I'm not sure. See, I bandy about the, like, it's one of my all-time favourites, but it is a film that's kind of, like, had a deep impact on me. Not the film Deep Impact, but actually The Fly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's nice to hear that you've had the same effect, because I saw it when I was a kid, and I think when you see films when you're a kid... they stay with you for the kind of reasons because you were so impressionable back then. It kind of had like a massive impact on such like a fresh young mind. But I mean, it's obviously had the same effect on you. So that's good to hear that it's still like a potent film.
Yeah, still works.
And it's like 31, 32 years old. I mean, if you ask someone in the 1980s if what they thought of the 1958 Fly, they'd probably say the same things you've said today.
Yeah.
because it looked dated then. I remember the 1958 Fly when I was told, I went, God, I mean, I appreciate it, but fucking hell, it looks like it's from like literally another era. And this Fly still kind of looks like a modern passable film. And it's still obviously a very good film in terms of its dramatic, the acting, the way the script is written, the way the story is structured and the special effects, especially, and just the way the whole thing, the mix is put together, the way it's put through the telepod, if you will, is still obviously an effective piece of entertainment and cinema and something to think about when you've left the theatre and or living room, when you've turned off your Blu-ray / DVD.
Or watched it illegally online.
What would you give it out of 10?
Oh,
it's so torn.
I gave The Thing a 91 out of 100.
Oh, we're going to 100 then. What would you give this out of 100 then?
93.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So a 9 out of 10 pretty much.
I didn't know that this was Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid either. I didn't know that that's where that came from. I'd heard that tag before, but I didn't know that it was from this film.
Yeah, it's kind of entered the popular culture a bit, like In Space No One Can Hear You Scream. It's like one of the great like movie taglines that's kind of out there.
Yeah.
So you've probably heard it in The Simpsons and or Family Guy or somewhere, or just generally in like
I've heard it. Yeah, I've definitely heard it.
Yeah.
What we've done on previous shows, and we're going to do on this one again, apparently they are remaking this film.
They are.
So, ignoring what's been announced, who is your Seth Brundle? And how do you do it? Do you stand the same lines that Cronenberg went with? Do you keep strong love? You've got to keep the love story, really, haven't you?
Yeah, I think you do, because otherwise there's nothing kind of lost or anything precious like taken away. So I guess you do. But then I think a lot of remakes recently, they just kind of rehashes of like the original film.
Yeah.
And in fact, you could even level that claim at like The Force Awakens, which is like a loose remake of Star Wars. But I don't know. I mean, Michael Fassbender maybe springs to mind.
That's not a bad show.
As a Seth Brundle, he looks a bit nerdy and scientist-y. I'd maybe say Edward Norton, because he's even more kind of like
I do
nerdy.
Like Edward Norton. I like Sam Rockwell as well.
Oh, no. Even better, I think. He'd be better out of all three of those. That's an even better shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because I think he's more kind of like weird and kind of like has more tics.
Have you seen Seven Psychopaths?
No, that's I've seen Moon. That's what I'm kind of like going off in my head now.
He's tremendous in that.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Really, really, really good. And Christopher Walken's in it, so what else do you need? Put your hands up. No!
That was pretty good. I think even back then, maybe Walken was maybe considered, because Cronenberg's previous film, The Dead Zone, starred Christopher Walken.
I want to see that one as well. Like Stephen King.
We'll do that as the next one.
Okay.
Next week we'll do... God, this is so easy.
Yeah.
I just send you films and we talk about them.
I like that we link them together, though. I think that works. It's very organic how we come up with them. I think that works better. Like, we haven't got a list that we're working from.
No, I don't like that, because you're like, oh, I've got to do this thing.
Yeah.
But no, the Dead Zone is a little bit similar in the sense that he's a guy in love who, like, depending on which way you look at it, gains or loses something. It's either a gift or a curse.
Oh, did you get The Shining?
Kind of, yeah. It's like it's a very like common Stephen King theme. Yeah, but like,
you shine, boy. You shine.
Yeah. He has this like tragic accident and then kind of comes back different.
Right, okay.
But he can predict the future if he kind of touches someone's hand, and it's all the kind of like weird things he goes
through.
Oh, like
in Bruce Willis, does he? Sort of. He doesn't predict the future. He can see what people have done.
Yeah, a bit like Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
But
there you go.
Every time Chris Walken has a vision, like more of his life falls apart physically, mentally, and like...
Oh, it wears on him.
It wears on him, and he can't predict anything happening to himself. And every time he kind of like... has a looks into this portal or reaches through into this other world to
win
this power.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's telekinesis, if you will. Or, yeah, premonitionary. Is that a word?
It's premonitionary, I think.
His shine, if you will.
You shine, boy.
You got the shine, boy.
You got the shine, boy.
Oh, Lord.
Scheming about that.
I think Scatman Carruthers, for that time... it's probably the most racist acting black man in cinema. Like, they stopped acting like that in like maybe the 30s or the Gone with the Wind era. And here we are in like, was it 1980 with Jack Nicholson? He's going, oh boy, oh lordy.
Yeah, it's like the fucking, what is it? The it's not the crows, is he? It's the, what are they in that Disney film?
They're crows. Yeah. How you doing, sir?
Racist ass crows.
Yeah. But I mean, as I said, well, but it's like that's the 40s. So that was kind of like the time, and that was, I guess, expected. It's going to be interesting, actually, how they tackle that in the live action remakes. They are doing a live action remake of Dumbo, aren't they?
Yeah, Will Smith. Maybe that's what Will Smith's character does. You shine, boy.
Want me to do the soft shoot for you, boss? Mm.
I don't know if that's too racist. I'm not sure anymore.
It's fine. Come on. I mean...
You are quoting the film, so...
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I'm up for that. Is that Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken, though? Or is he not quite Christopher Walken
yet? Yeah, no. It's one of the Walkenest Walken's performances ever.
Beautiful. I mean...
But yeah, no, I think you'll have a good time watching that. Whether it's good or bad, I don't know. But that's another effective film and another David Cronenberg film and the film previously to this. So I'm going to try and find out post credits to this whether Walken was ever attached to play Seth Brundle. Because it seems like a better...
They took a risk, didn't they? They took a risk with them.
Yeah, it seems like a better fit for Walken. I mean, on paper, Jeff Goldblum's awesome in this, but it's just telling that... Maybe they didn't consider or the studio would want Chris Walken because that's his kind of stock in trade back then.
Yeah, so especially so Jack Nicholson could have done it as well.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, they went the right route to that kind of like all that weirdness kind of like plays all those things that Jeff Goldblum does naturally look like he's turning into a fly anyway. So,
yeah, you're a fucking drag, you know that?
Yeah, a perfect. That's what I say to all the girls when I have sex with me. a perfectly executed film and an 80s classic. So there we have it, folks. Toffer did, in fact, think Alien. Sorry.
Nope.
Was worth it.
Yeah,
the thing was worth it. But this week, The Fly was worth it. 1986's classic sci-fi horror film. If you've not seen it yet, why you listen to this? You've just ruined the film for yourself. But what do I know?
Yeah.
We shall return. I know, right? We shall return next week with David Cronenberg's prior film to this, 1983's The Dead Zone, with Christopher Walken. And not Scatman Carruthers playing a psychic with the Heart of Gold.
Up his ass.
Oh no! There's a black man acting like an Uncle Tom pastiche from the 1940s. I can't do it.
Thomas.
Tom. Oh, good times when you could be racist in cartoons and get away. Well, you still can. They do it in South Park, don't they? So what do I know?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
But there we have it. We shall return next week. Toffer, as this is your show, and I just steamroll over you for the entire 50 minutes, so do you have anything to add or wrap up?
That's just fine, mate. This is the easiest hour for me, so I can just fucking just jump in. You can follow the show at Was It Worth It Pod on the Twitter. We've got lots of other shows, as we've referenced. There's also the Master Debaters show that you can listen to. We've just had a lovely episode with James Murray from Impractical Jokers. So go and give that.
You're turning into questionable.
Mate, he's fucking smashed it that episode out. So thank you very much for listening to that if you have. Listen to the Toddler Review shows. They're doing very, very well. And at the moment, we are still in the top 20 on Podomatic, which is nice. I think we're number 13 at the minute. So
when the kid grows up, if the toddler thing takes off more, how are you going to do more of it? You're going to have to find a new toddler.
I'll just find one. I'll hang about by Asda.
Can I borrow your kid and ask him about films? I'm like, what are you doing?
The shit loves by Asda.
Local podcaster arrested.
Yeah, Ethan.
For pointing a phallic object in the face of a child.
Shut up.
It was his microphone.
Where can people find you, Ethan?
In a basement. Trying to get it hard for an old bit of 10 second side boob with Gina Davis.
Yeah,
when I'm not doing that,
you can
find me at Ethan McKinley UK on Twitter, and you can find me at ethanmckinley.com where you can hear my questionable show. I'm trying to get the composer of Mission Impossible 5 next. So
oh, really?
For the three people that are interested in that, please check out the show. But yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for having me on the show again, Toffer. I do like showing you the light.
Yeah. Shining a light on me there, boy.
Shining a light. Put one of those vomiting on donut films on for me, son. I can't get it hard anymore.
Casual racism. Peace, bitches.
Peace out. Bye, everybody. Love you. Bye.